because he was a man who would never accept oppression from anybody. He said that it is haram and that it is a duty, it's incumbent upon Muslims to rise up and stand against them. Now, of course, at that time in the South, I'm sure you would know, but I just want to share some information with you, that the leader of the Muslims, or one of the leaders of the Muslims, was Sheikh Raghib Harb in the South. And he was, of course, martyred in February of 1984. He used to say quite openly that, I know that the Zionists will kill me, but I'm not going to leave South Lebanon because I'm not going to abandon my people who are terrorizing our population. Sheikh Sayed Abbas Musawi took over as the leader of Hezbollah after that, although Hezbollah had not formally declared its existence. They did it in 1985, but Sheikh Sayed Abbas Musawi took over, and then he was also martyred in February of 1992. In fact, the same day that a commemoration ceremony was being held for Sheikh Raghib Harb in Beirut, and Sheikh Sayed Musawi, on his way back from Beirut to his southern home with his family, with his wife and children, the Israelis fired a missile at his car and he was martyred as well. So this was in February of 1992. And it was at that time that then Sheikh Sayed Nasrullah took over as the leader of Hezbollah. And you know that under his leadership, of course, Hezbollah got very well organized and started to resist the Zionist invaders in a way that they, first of all, in 1985, Hezbollah were able to force the Zionist army to withdraw from much of Lebanon, and they actually occupied a zone which was referred to as a security zone in the south. And this extended to about 20 miles from the Israeli border, all the way to the Litani River. And then as a result of Hezbollah's resistance operations, ultimately the Zionists were forced and driven out of almost all of Lebanon in May of 2000. And the only area they occupy now under a pretext, which is the Sheba Farms, it's a small enclave, and the Zionists say, well, this belongs to Syria, that's why we're not forgetting it, because we are still at war with Syria. And Syria has also said that, no, these farms belong to Lebanon, and Hezbollah have the right to, you know, acquire this area as well. But you can see that it was as a result of that resistance that the people of Lebanon, inspired by leaders like Sayyid Sheikh Fadlallah, and as well as Sayyid Nasrullah and other great leaders, they were able to drive the Zionists out of there. Now, I want to mention to you that Sheikh Sayyid Fadlallah was not involved in the day-to-day operations of Hezbollah operations. He was not sort of, you know, involved in, he was like a spiritual leader. And he provided spiritual guidance. In fact, in 1998, I asked one of the brothers while in Beirut, I said, how do you see the role of Sheikh Sayyid Fadlallah in this Hezbollah operation? And he just smiled at me. He didn't say anything. He didn't answer the question. And of course, it was perhaps, you know, he treated me as a brother. He didn't want to lie to me, and he didn't even want to sort of say too much. But I know that Sheikh Sayyid Fadlallah was not involved directly in the day-to-day operations of Hezbollah. He was like a spiritual guide for the whole movement. And under his guidance, of course, in Lebanon, they have established many orphanages, hospitals, support structures for widows. I visited some of them, the orphanages. In fact, Sheikh Abdullah asked me to visit some of the orphanages, and he also asked me to attend the Jummah Salat in Imam Hassanain Mosque. It so happened that I was heading to Pakistan 2 days later, so I couldn't attend the Jummah Salat, and I missed it. He was kind enough to say, well, come and attend the Jummah Salat, and you will see the kind of enthusiasm that people have. I want to touch on two other aspects relating to Sheikh Sayyid Fadlallah. One was that in March of 1985, the CIA, in conjunction with the Saudis, I'm going to give you details. I mean, I've got all the evidence for that. They actually conspired to assassinate Sheikh Sayyid Fadlallah. And the Saudi ambassador in the US at the time, Bandar bin Sultan, was instrumental in organizing this. He, in fact, And this is reported in Bob Woodward's book, The Way, The Secret, you know, Wars of CIA. He has given all the details. And I've got a book, I've read it, I've reviewed it. That Bunker was the one who put forward the $3 million money into a secret CIA account, which was then going to be used to hire British mercenaries and Lebanese mercenaries who were going to carry out this assassination attack on Sheikh Sayed Qutb. And the plan was, and this was that this whole operation was given to a former British commando, who was a retired commando. He was in charge of this. And the plan was that they were going to raid a car with massive amounts of explosives, and they're going to park that car just outside the apartment building where Sheikh Sayed Qutb used to live. And this was also right opposite the Hassanein Mosque. And the idea was that that car would explode at the time immediately after Jummah Salat. Now you can imagine, if you sort of, you know, think about it, when people come for Jummah Salat, I mean, everybody is not in the Salat at the time of the start of the khutbah. But everybody is there at the end of Salat, because everybody, whether they're coming from work or whatever, so you would see that the maximum number of people would be there. And this car exploded very soon after Jummah Salat. And of course, it was intended to assassinate Sheikh Qutb. I mean, of course, Allah wanted to save him. So the way it happened was that he had another appointment on that very day on Jummah in another part of Beirut. So immediately after Jummah Salat, instead of staying back to meet people and to answer their questions, he immediately left in his car to go to the other side of town to have to attend that meeting. And so the car exploded and Sheikh Sayed Qutb had already left. This is how he survived that assassination attempt. But more than 80 people were martyred in that, and more than 200 were badly wounded. No. Okay, now you can see, imagine that the criminal conspiracy that the CIA and Bandar bin Sultan participated in. And when Bandar saw this on television, that the plot that they had carried out had failed, and he knew that, you know, it will ultimately be, he would be exposed as part of this conspiracy. So he panicked. So what he did was, he sent a message through his contacts in Lebanon, and of course, at that time, Lebanese intelligence was fully penetrated by, you know, CIA and Mossad agents and so on, and of course Saudi agents, who still have great influence in Lebanon's intelligence structure as well as in Lebanese political structure. He sent word to Sheikh Sayed Qutb, and he said that they would like to pay compensation, or they would like to pay compensation for this attack that has occurred, and that we are going to give you the names of the people who were responsible for carrying out this attack. So Sayed Qutb said, okay, so the names of those people, the Lebanese, who had carried out or planted the explosives for the attack, their names were given to the Lebanese intelligence as well as to Hezbollah, and of course these people were arrested and put on trial and dealt with by the Lebanese government. And then Bandar proposed through his contacts to Sheikh Sayed Qutb that he would like to compensate for this. And so Sayed Qutb said, okay, you want to compensate, you can provide food and other goods, which amounted to about $2 million to the families of the victims and other people that have been injured. So you could see that Sheikh Sayed Qutb was a very big-hearted man. I mean, he forgave this criminal attempt on his life. Otherwise, if law were to be applied equitably, then I would say that, you know, Bill Casey, who was the CIA director at the time, he died in 1987. Him and Bunker should be put on trial as war criminals, because they killed innocent people. And it was well established. I mean, nobody has denied this in the book. It has been confirmed. And yet, say, Qutb said, forget it, I'm not going to, you know, get involved, because there are other bigger issues involved. This issue, this struggle, is more than my personal life. So that's one aspect that you can see, his big-heartedness, his forgiveness, because it affected him personally. But he said, as far as the other people are concerned, they must be compensated. And of course, that's how they were compensated. I just want to touch on one final point, which is, I think, quite revealing of how the West behaves and reacts towards events that have occurred in Lebanon. When Sheikh Sayed Qutb passed away, before I say that, I just want to mention But you know, I mean, of course you are aware of the fact that in the West there is a lot of talk about freedom of speech and freedom of thought, and you know, journalists and cartoonists, they can draw wild cartoons of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and then they say that this is because of our freedom of expression, we are free to do what we, nobody should censor us. Yet, when it comes to, on the one hand, they say that they have freedom to attack Muslims, to vilify Muslims, but when it comes to expressing any sympathy for Muslims, then they are not allowed. Now let me give you two examples. First, the first example is something that occurred about a month and a half ago. This very famous American journalist by the name of Helen Thomas, she was a very senior White House correspondent for Associated Press. She was sitting in a gathering. This was to talk about, this was actually a number of Jewish organization leaders who had been invited to the White House. So Helen Thomas was also there, and one of the rabbis, he asked Helen Thomas, without Helen Thomas knowing that what she was saying was being recorded. So she thought this is off the record conversation that she's involved in. So she was asked, what do you think we should do about the situation of Palestine? And she said, well, the Jews should get the hell out of there. These were her words. I'm quoting you her words. And so the rabbi asked her, where should they go? She said, well, they can go back to Germany or America, wherever they came from. Palestine doesn't belong to them. And this rabbi, of course, exposed this, brought it out into the public, and he said, well, look, Helen Thomas is speaking against the Jews. She's an anti-Semite, and therefore, they made such a hue and cry about this that poor Helen Thomas, who had been the White House correspondent for nearly 40 years, she had to resign. Why? Because she criticized the Jews. Now, surely she could have probably used her words a little, chosen careful words. Instead of saying Jews, she could have said the Zionists, because not all Jews are Zionists. And yet you can see the punishment that was inflicted on her. Second example. So that means that if you condemn Muslims, that's freedom of speech. If you criticize the Zionists, then you must pay a price.
Right.
Okay, so that's one contradiction that you see over there. Second, after Sheikh Syed Fadlullah passed away, there is this Lebanese journalist by the name of Octavia Nasser, who works for CNN. She was their Middle East bureau chief. Actually, very senior. She had been there for about, I think, nearly 20 years now. She wrote on her Twitter, she said, very sad to hear about the passing away of Sheikh Syed Fadlullah. He was a great man and an intellectual giant of Hezbollah. This is what she wrote on her Twitter. Immediately the Zionists went ballistic. So CNN is now bombarded with all kinds of criticism, and there's a woman by the name of Parsi Khosravi. She's an Iranian. And she's also been working in CNN for about 20 years. She's the vice president of international news. Now you'll see, anytime you see an Iranian or a Muslim working in any of these organizations that gets to the top, you can be rest assured that they are agents of those people. They're not Muslims. They're only Muslims by name. You can see this in Toronto, people like Tariq Fatah and Irshad Manji and these other clowns and jokers that have been, propped up, projected as if they are our spokespersons, our leaders, etc. Anyway, after Octavia Nasser's Twitter message, there was pressure brought to bear on CNN, and Parsi Khosravi actually had a meeting with Octavia, and she forced Octavia to resign her position. So, in the US, you can condemn Muslims, you can draw wild cartoons about the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but you cannot condemn or criticize the Zionists, and you cannot praise Muslims. Even in death, you can't praise them. So Octavia Nasser was fired. In fact, another incident happened. The British ambassador to Lebanon, by the name of Frances Guy, she actually wrote on her blog, she said that Sheikh Syed Fadlullah was an intellectual giant. You couldn't help, when you met him, you couldn't help being inspired by his intellectual capabilities. She also came under tremendous pressure from the British government, Zionists, and they actually sent message to the British government to say that this statement of her has to be withdrawn. So here is the British ambassador who had to withdraw a statement from her blog in which she said that Sheikh Syed Fadlallah is an intellectual giant. So where is the freedom of expression? Where is the freedom of, you know, thought? That even their ambassadors cannot say something positive about Muslims, even though they know that he's an intellectual giant. The only exception to this, I must say, is Robert Fisk, who had the courage. He wrote a beautiful article on July the 10th in the Independent newspaper, and he said, "Shame on CNN." And he said, "No wonder the world no longer takes CNN seriously." And he said, "As for the British government," he said, "they're not worth talking about." And then he said something very interesting. He said that, I've always met Sheikh Syed Fadlallah whenever I came to Lebanon, and he always received me with great kindness." And then he revealed something which is very interesting. He said, "I was going to Iraq in 2003 from Lebanon, and before I went, I talked to Sheikh Syed Fadlallah and I said, I'm going to Iraq, but I'm worried for my safety because Iraq is a very unsafe place." So he said, he gave me the phone number of one of his students in Iraq. And he said, "You go there, and this student of mine is going to look after you. Don't worry about it." So he said, I arrived in Baghdad, and I phoned this student. It turns out to be an alim. He comes from Najaf. He meets me in Beirut, in Baghdad, and he takes me around wherever I want to go. And he said that something interesting happened. He said that, of course, word spread around, because this alim was taking me around, word spread around that I'm here. So then I would see these students of Sheikh Syed Fadlallah coming to visit me in my hotel. And each of them would bring about 70, 80 pages of documents to me, and they say, these are our khutbas, could you please take them to our teacher and our sheikh in Beirut. So then I collected two suitcases full of these manuscripts. All of the students coming, you know, giving me these piles and piles of their khutbas. They said that these are khutbas they are giving me to our trip to Lebanon. So he said, "I arrived in Beirut with two suitcases full of, you know, documents, these khutbas that I'm carrying." And he said, "When I met Sheikh Fadlallah and I said, Sheikh, your students gave me all of these khutbas of theirs." And he said, he had a broad smile on his face. And he thanked me and he hugged me and he said, "Thank you very much." And he said, "Later I found that these were not khutbas, these were, of course, secret documents that were given from there, carried to Beirut by Robert Fisk." And he said, this is what he concluded with, Robert Fisk. He said, "And I don't care what the British government thinks, and I don't care what the Zionists think, and I don't care what the Americans think. I still think Sheikh Syed Fadlallah was a great man, and we are going to miss him."
Subhanallah.
So you see that, you know, he had influence on so many people beyond, you know, just the Muslim. And I think we should emulate his example in our lives. And I feel it a great honor that I had met him, that I had talked to him, that I had imbibed some of the wisdom that he imparted. And there is no doubt that the Muslim world is going to be, you know, at a great loss by losing such a great man. Thank you, and wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.